Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We could potentially have just one more baseball game this season. Welcome into another edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you. Love Monday shows. There's always so much to recap. Fridays and Mondays, typically my favorite two shows of the week, because we can preview, then we can recap, and there is a lot to recap. We had two excellent baseball games over the weekend. Well, we had three, actually, if you want to count Friday night. Dodgers take control 2-1 of the World Series Friday night. The Rays tied up 2-2 with what was probably the most bizarre ending to a World Series game you will ever see. In fact, when you look at win probability, the Dodgers had the biggest flub ever in a World Series game. It was insanity, and the Rays took advantage to tie it up 2-2. And going into last night's game, I had felt as if all the momentum was on Tampa's side. How are the Dodgers going to recover from blowing a game the way they did, where they just had 20 seconds of pure insanity work against them? But they answered back, and they relied on their ace, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, the greatest pitcher in the history of this franchise. Yes, better than Sandy Koufax, better than Don Drysdale, the numbers will speak for themselves. Clayton Kershaw is the greatest pitcher in Dodger history, and there's the narrative around his struggles, right? He can't get this team over the hump, he chokes in the playoffs, and he was brilliant last night when his team needed him once again. But still, the drama in last night's game. Fourth inning, Manuel Margot's on third, and he attempts to steal and comes inches away from completing a stolen base at home. I mean, it's a play that you will see for two decades if Margot is safe. And he was inches, literally inches away from becoming safe at home. And Tampa Bay really never threatened again after that. It was a monumental play. The World Series has been phenomenal this year. Last year's World Series was fantastic between Houston and Washington. It was can't-miss baseball. Remember, the road team won every single game. In the bubble, things have been incredible. And I do believe, I honestly believe, we're going to get to see Game 7. But we'll talk more about that next segment here on the show. Aside from Major League Baseball, as far as college football is concerned, we got the Big Ten back this week. And we have one upset, one big upset right out of the gate. Penn State falling to Indiana in a game that came down to the wire. Penn State showed a lot. They showed a lot to get back into the game, trailing. Indiana forces overtime. They go for two. They come inches, inches away from not breaking the plane, but Indiana gets the win, number 8. Penn State goes down. We had a terrific game between number 6, Oklahoma State, number 17, Iowa State. Oklahoma State comes out on top 24-21. And we got to see Ohio State. Ohio State's a team that, even though they hadn't played, the pollsters had them in the top 4. They beat Nebraska. They beat Nebraska handedly. And so the pollsters put Ohio State at number 3. And look, I understand a lot of frustration. The Big Ten hasn't played. Now all of a sudden Ohio State's number 3. But look, these rankings, it's a guide for us right now. And I believe Ohio State is probably, I'm not going to say probably. Ohio State is a top 4 team in the country. I can buy it. Justin Fields was nearly perfect in this game against Nebraska. And then you had BYU topping Texas State. Zach Wilson proving that he is going to be a top 3 quarterback prospect in the NFL draft. BYU once again takes care of business. They blast Texas State 52-14. I had a problem with BYU in this game, though. And if you missed it, I'm talking about a fake punt with 6 minutes to play in the game, up 49-14 against Texas State. That's embarrassing. And I've stuck up for BYU all offseason, and I have no problem with the Cougars blasting through Texas State. They have to put up style points. I get it. You don't run a fake punt up 35 with 6 minutes to play against a team like Texas State. You just don't do it. And Kalani Sitake played it off as if he didn't call that play. Then he kicks a field goal moments later to make it 52-14. And again, I understand the fact that BYU needs style points. That's not the way you go about it. Really, running a fake punt in the fourth quarter against Texas State's not going to help your ranking any. Your strength of schedule is still poor. And again, I've stuck up for BYU in that regard. I've said time and time again, they are only doing what they could do. I mean, they're playing a poor schedule because no conference wanted them to join for whatever reason that is. We didn't know if they were going to have a season. BYU gets by Texas State. I hope they show better form than that moving ahead. Because again, I've stuck up for BYU all offseason. Cougars climb one spot to number 11. They jump Miami, who drops one spot. Michigan climbs five. They're now number 13. There's a lot to talk about. The top 10 in particular, because again, this is the AP rankings. It's not the college football playoff rankings. But I do believe now that we are 6-7 weeks into the college season, here's a fair question to ask. Should BYU garner consideration for the college football playoff? It's a fair question to ask now because they are number 11. And even with the Pac-12 making its return in a couple of weeks, I don't think the Cougars are going to drop drastically once the Pac-12 and the Big Ten start playing a full schedule. I don't think it's going to happen. I think you can make the case for, you know, just looking at teams that are below them right now, Boise State, maybe. Maybe the Broncos jump them. Oregon's below BYU. They will most certainly jump them, especially if they blast opponents in the Pac-12. But really, Penn State's already suffered a loss. BYU's higher than Penn State. And so just looking at it, all in all, are the Cougars a legitimate threat? We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show as well. Let's take a look at the national sports headlines. Some bad news for the Cleveland Browns, who are playing good football. They're picking up wins, let's put it that way. Odell Beckham Jr. has a torn ACL in his left knee, and he is going to miss the season. Not good news for Baker Mayfield, who struggled out of the gate yesterday. He was 0-for-5 to start the game, completed his next 18 passes as Cleveland rallied to top Cincinnati. Odell Beckham out for the season with a torn ACL. Fantasy owners hate to hear that as well. Also, Cam Newton says that he knows his job may be in jeopardy. Cam was dreadful yesterday. 3 picks, 98 yards passing, and the Patriots were ran at home by the San Francisco 49ers. That's a story to talk about. And I'll tell you another story, the Atlanta Falcons. This team cannot seem to win football games. Todd Gurley scores a touchdown, gives them the lead late in the game. He scored too fast because the Lions take the ball down the field. They get 6, they win the game. Atlanta seems like they can do no right at the moment. And if you're a Falcon fan, you're probably okay with that. I also want to talk Dallas Cowboys, and I think this is a fair conversation to have on the show today as well. Is Mike McCarthy one and done in Dallas? Yes. I'm telling you right now, Mike McCarthy will be one and done in Dallas. We'll talk more about that later on in the show. As far as the national sports schedule is concerned, again, we only have one game tonight, Bears-Rams. That'll wrap up Week 7 of the NFL, and then we'll move into Week 8 this Thursday. We get the Panthers and those same Falcons I was just talking about a moment ago. Local sports recap is coming up. A lot to get into there. The high school football season came to an end on Friday. Emory suffering a loss to the Grantsville Cowboys. Final score was 47-14. This game was much closer than the final score. Emory had 3 trips to the red zone, could not convert, got inside the 25-yard line, I believe, 5 times in this game. Emory was right there with Grantsville. Very proud of this football team. Very, very proud. This is a team that won 1 game last season. These seniors have started since they were sophomores. They worked their way up. They get 5 wins this year. a whole lot to be proud of on the Emory's High School football front. We'll talk about that in just a bit. We'll also give you the recap on volleyball, both Carbon and Emory picking up wins. You can get your complete game recaps on all three of those games, football and volleyball, right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. Let's break for just a moment. Local sports recap coming up. I want to talk World Series off night tonight. Game 6 tomorrow. The Dodgers could close it out. I try very hard to be unbiased on this show, but I do believe I can relate to you as a listener and a fan when talking about this World Series. And I know in the state of Utah, we have the Jazz, right? And the Jazz, so much passion behind the Utah Jazz. I mean, the fan base is rabid. They love their Jazz. Look, I can relate to you right now. We'll talk about that more in just a bit. It's Drive Time Sports, and we're back on 107.3 FM and 750 AM right after this.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Clayton Kershaw's brilliance in Game 5 has the Dodgers on the brink of their first World Series championship since 1988. We're going to talk World Series baseball. It's a rare off night for the baseball playoffs. We've only had two of these since the playoffs began. It's the second of the World Series. Tomorrow night, the Dodgers will have an opportunity to close it out, and they'll have to rely on the arm of Tony Gonsolin, while Tampa, they will throw everything in the kitchen sink at the Dodgers. We saw this in Game 4, and I expect there to be a lot of drama when we continue the World Series tomorrow night. We're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Steve Bortstein. He's a great friend of mine, great friend of the show, joined us for many years to talk baseball, horse racing, among other things. And Steve, the Dodgers are one win away from a World Series. First time in the Dave Roberts era that they have held a three-game lead over anyone. And what I mean by three-game lead, they've gotten to win number three before the opponents. It's the first time this has happened.
I want you to say it again so you hear it yourself. The Dodgers have the lead and can win the World Series with one win. I want you to say it again, and I want people to hear it, because Jordan Buscarini, just for the listeners out there, is a fan of the Dodgers. I am a fan of the Dodgers. I am the old man who calms him down during games when everything looks to be going wrong, and I have to be the old Sith master who has to calm down the young Jedi over here. Because during the games, the last couple of nights, now granted, Game 4 turned into a disaster at the end, and we'll get to that in a second, but Jordan has a tendency to think the world is coming to an end, and I have to calm him down, and things are going to be okay.
Look,
but it's so much fun, and I want to also say, before we turn it over to you for a minute here, and I know we have a lot to talk about, I read a report that this is the lowest-rated World Series ever. The TV ratings are bad. Let me just say, shame on you if you're not watching.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what more baseball could have done in this pandemic than to have the two best teams from the two leagues in Major League Baseball play what has been an epic World Series, and you're still not watching. That's on you at this point. I don't care what your beliefs might be, what your opinions might be. I don't give a damn. If you're not watching this, shame on you, because this is turning out to be a classic World Series.
I agree 100%. And I'm glad you bring up the fanhood. See, this is an opportunity for me to relate to a listener. Okay, so in the state of Utah, Utah Jazz fans are so passionate. They love their team. One thing that Jazz fans have never seen is an NBA championship. And so if you're a Jazz fan, you tend to think that the sky is falling. Look, I talk to Jazz fans all the time, and I try to stay completely unbiased here on the show. But look, I bleed Dodger blue. And Steve, one thing that I have never seen, you've got to see this, my father has got to see this, I have never watched the Dodgers win a World Series. And so I'm sure Jazz fans can relate to me when I say, when Manuel Margot goes from first to third and attempts to steal home, you tend to believe the sky is falling and worst case scenario is going to happen because of the 2008 NLCS, the 2009 NLCS, the 2017 World Series, the 2018 World Series, the 2019 Divisional Round. The sky typically falls with the Dodgers. Jazz fans have to be able to relate to that.
I get it. And yes, I'm old, so I've seen a Dodgers World Series. You're the young Skywalker out there, and I have to play the old Obi-Wan Kenobi role of, okay, this is going to be all right. When Margot's on third last night, the world's coming to an end at Jordan's house, and me, I'm like, patience, patience. Now, when I'm saying that to you through instant messenger on Facebook, I never thought the Margot stealing home thing was going to happen, but he got out of it. Kershaw got out of the jam, then he comes out, throws two great innings. It's like, okay, we're back to normal now. Everything's going to be fine. So it is fun to be the passionate fan, but it's also mind-numbing to be the old fan in the room, because how do you explain game four to somebody? So it's been an interesting, you know, web of emotions, and I know there's going to be a lot more of them Tuesday and perhaps Wednesday for game seven.
Yeah, let's talk about the Rays before we dive into the Dodgers here, because again, you mentioned Margot and his attempt to steal home. And look, it's very, very difficult to not like the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, if you watch baseball, there are teams that you begin not to like. If you're not a San Diego Padre fan, you probably don't like the San Diego Padres. If you're not an Atlanta Brave fan, you probably don't like the antics of Ronald Acuna. Okay, when you watch Tampa Bay, even if you're not a Ray fan, you have to appreciate what Kevin Cash and what this Rays roster brings to the table. And Manuel Margot was a guy that, look, being a Dodger fan, you being a Dodger fan, we watched this guy a lot with the Padres. We knew he had the capability of being special. And last night, he nearly pulled off a play that we would be talking about 20 years from now had it been successful stealing home on Clayton Kershaw in Game 5 of the World Series.
Sure, I go back and I'll use football for an analogy here. Being an SC guy, being a USC fan, being a USC alum, I'm never going to not see Vince Young. Never. I will go the rest of my life watching Vince Young score that touchdown in the Rose Bowl for the national championship, beating USC in 2006. I'm never going to live that down. I will forever see that. We would have forever seen Manuel Margot stealing home. We will forever, if the Rays turn out to win this World Series, we will forever see Randy Arozarena tapping on home plate, scoring the winning run in Game 4. So we're always going to have to deal with that. My hope is that we're going to see, you know, whoever ends up in the mound in the ninth inning, you know, tomorrow night or Wednesday night, getting on the mound, raising their arms in victory, because that's the memory we're going to go with. And I liked your analogy there also of the Padres and the Braves, because there's not a personality on the Rays roster that you inherently dislike. Like, they're all good guys, right? We haven't heard anything, you know, off-putting about Randy Arozarena. We haven't heard anything off-putting about G-Man Choi. We haven't heard anything off-putting about their pitchers or anything like that. So you don't inherently dislike anybody on the team. And I think that's also why maybe some people aren't watching, is that there aren't like these abundantly, you know, overwhelming personalities. There's the, we feel bad for Kershaw because of his well-chronicled postseason difficulties. We like Cody Bellinger because he doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't talk a lot of trash. We like Justin Turner because he's a good guy. And there's not one guy on these rosters that I think you inherently dislike. Even if you're not a Dodgers fan, it's not like you go around and go, oh, I hate that guy, right? So I think that's one of the reasons, because we're in that culture now where you have to have a common enemy. People don't like LeBron James. People don't like Tom Brady. You don't have those rosters. You don't have those personalities on either of these rosters, and maybe that's why there's not the great ratings for this. I don't really care. I think it's a horrible excuse to not watch this, but I think, you know, I've grown in appreciation of who the Rays are, right? I mean, I think I've gotten that. I think we all have that now. We might not have known a lot about them because of a 60-game season. We didn't see a lot of their games, perhaps. I don't think there's one guy on that roster that I go, boy, I really hate that guy.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%, and I think that is part of the reason why, while they bring anguish, It's just different. It's different with this Rays team. You look at what they have done as far as the gauntlet that they have gone through to get to this point. I mean, they topped the Yankees. They topped the Astros. They've done everything that was asked of them, and they've done it in fairly dominating fashion when you take a look at the rosters that they have gone up against. Now, while they are a great story, last night, in my mind, there was an even greater story, and that was Clayton Kershaw. For the very first time in his career, he has won two games within the same series. We are talking about one of the greatest pitchers to ever play the game. There's no question about it. And now, as far as postseason strikeouts, he is the all-time leader as he passes Justin Verlander last night, 206 strikeouts in the postseason. Throughout this postseason, he has been incredible. 30 innings, 2.9 ERA, 37 strikeouts, and now he is one away from the ultimate redemption. The idea of seeing Kershaw in the dugout last year following the setback to the Nationals, where he was asked to really bail his team out of a very difficult situation and he came up short, to me, that's been the reoccurring theme, Steve, over the course of Clayton Kershaw's career. This guy's pitched on short rest. This guy has gone into impossible situations when we knew the Dodgers weren't the better team, be it against the Cardinals or the Phillies, or even last year against the Nationals. You look at the situations that Kershaw has failed in, and they've almost been unfair to him. This was his chance to rewrite the narrative, and regardless if the Dodgers win or not, he did that this postseason.
And I want to give credit here. I want to give a shout-out here to Mark Pryor and the job he's done navigating this pitching staff. And no offense to Rick Honeycutt, who did a great job at that job, who did a great job at that position for years with the Dodger organization. But Mark Pryor has had to juggle a lot during this postseason run here and throughout this entire season. Mark Pryor has done an amazing job with this staff. I mean, think of the things that this staff has had to go through just in the last month and a half. You had the Buehler blister issue. You had Kenley Jansen, who we'll talk about, I'm sure, at some point, and his emotional, mental state, his physical state, you know, trying to keep him on balance. Dustin May, trying to get him into a role where he's comfortable. Bring in Gratterall, a new kid who, you know, we didn't know a lot about this season. Gonzalez, Urias, the constant shuffling of the pitching staff, so whether they be starters, whether then to find out, okay, we signed David Price in the offseason, now he's going to opt out. Mark Pryor's done an amazing job, and in particular with Clayton Kershaw. I know we kind of questioned them pulling, Dave Roberts pulling Kershaw when they did last night. It was a gamble, and it worked this time. That's great. But it was an analytics thing, which we can argue that forever, whether analytics work or not. But I got to give Mark Pryor a lot of credit for the job he's done navigating and managing this pitching staff throughout this season.
No question. No question about it. Again, Steve Bortstein, our guest right now as we talk World Series. A rare off night, and then tomorrow it's Game 6, and if you're the Rays, even though you're down 3-2 in this series, if you would have told Kevin Cash at the beginning of the season, you're down 3-2 in the World Series, but you still have Blake Snell and Charlie Morton, they would have taken that scenario. Likewise, if you look at the Dodgers, you would say, look, you're one win away, you have Game 6, but you're going to be throwing Walker Buehler Game 7. Dave Roberts would have taken that scenario. So I don't know that the Dodgers obviously hold the advantage, but to think that this series is over is premature, because again, the two aces for Tampa Bay are still in Kevin Cash's holster. Tomorrow night's going to be an intriguing game. Tony Gonsolin against Blake Snell.
And I'm going to push back on they have the advantage with having the two starters here, because last night we saw how two starters coming back in the series have fared. The Dodgers got to Glasnow the second time they saw him. The Rays didn't get to Kershaw last night. They got one run on Clayton Kershaw last night. One. So I will push back on that, the fact that Blake Snell's coming out for performance number two, that's an advantage. Now we've seen him. We know what he brings. We know how we adjust to it, right? If you're the Dodgers, we know how we'll adjust to Blake Snell. We'll be able to get runs on him. We'll be able to get to him. That's the key to a second starter in a series, is how the team adjusts to that starter the second time they see him. Snell was brilliant in game two when he started. Okay, can he do it again in Game 6, where there's a lot more on the line? Again, being down 1-0 in a series and being down 3-2 in a series, it's a different set of emotions. Gonsolin, for his part, wasn't exceptional in game two. Wasn't at all. So it's the same scenario for him, but he's got the advantage of knowing what's waiting for him in game seven. Rays don't have that advantage. I think if the Dodgers can just elongate the bats, elongate the at-bats, that's what they did not do in game two against Blake Snell. They didn't elongate at-bats. They swung at pitches early. They bought in early. They bit on that changeup. I think if the Dodgers can adjust to that, get to him, I think that's going to be the difference. You've got to get runs on the board because the weakness, as it turns out, is the lower half of that bullpen. That's the weak link right there for the Rays. And the fact is, we talked about Margot trying to steal home. The fact of the matter is that I think we're seeing that Kevin Cash doesn't necessarily believe that his offense can manufacture runs. Now, they've been able to do so at times, but not all the time. The majority of their runs throughout the postseason have been scored with the long ball. And even throughout this World Series, they've relied on that. Their ability to create runs is not great. And I don't know if Kevin Cash doesn't know that already, and that's why maybe you made that decision to steal home. Maybe that's why, you know, they've gone to so many different pieces in that bullpen for the Rays, is that they don't have enough confidence in their offense to go run for run. It worked out in game four, but it hasn't worked out in other situations here. If the Dodgers can put runs on the board early, force them into a situation where they start playing desperate. Again, down 3-2 is a whole hell of a lot different than being up 3-2. If you're playing that way, I give the advantage to the Dodgers if they can get pressure, elongate at bats, and that's been something the Dodgers have done great at this series, in particular Max Muncy. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I think that's the difference in game six. Believe me, I'd love to see Buehler throw again, but I don't mind if it's next season. I don't have a problem with that at all.
You mentioned Max Muncy, and while everyone will talk about Corey Seager, they'll talk about Arozarena, which is phenomenal itself, because I can't recall the last time we had a World Series where it was the number two hitter in each lineup that you feared. And that's where we're at right now. Corey Seager and Arozarena, they have the hottest bats in this series, yet Max Muncy has been... he's been incredible, and that's a word that gets used often, but when you look at the postseason, I don't think you can oversell, Steve, what he's been able to accomplish. He has reached a base. I believe it's 15 consecutive games now he has reached a base, and he has, 20 walks, if I'm not mistaken. He hits a solo home run last night. Max Muncy is really one of the big MVPs for the Dodgers this postseason. I don't think there's any question about it.
And it's and again, this goes to the elongated at-bats. It's the frustrating foul ball off to the side, foul tips. It's the fouls off the netting in left or right field. And we take those for granted. And I think, you know, if you're a novice baseball fan, or if you're someone who just watches once in a while, foul balls are boring, right? And they are. But it's the effect they have on the opposing pitcher. It's the effect they have on opposing fielders. I go back to the stolen base of Mookie Betts getting to third the other night when the shortstop of the Rays is trying to navigate between, you know, you don't want him to see signs, but he has to move around, and that's why they can't make plays in the outfield. It's the game within the game that we don't pay enough attention to. Muncy's ability to elongate at-bats, Justin Turner's ability to do that, hell, even Cody Bellinger, who hasn't been remarkable this postseason. He's had a couple of great moments, particularly in the outfield. But the ability to elongate at-bats, the ability to frustrate a pitcher, the ability to frustrate a defense, and to wear them down a little bit each time they come to the plate has been remarkable this series. Even in addition to Muncy's numbers, once he's on base, once he does make contact, it's the elongated at-bats. It's the ability to drive up a pitch count when clearly you don't want to drive up that pitch count. That's been the real mainstay of this series for those three players in particular. Muncy, Turner, and Bellinger, whose numbers again have been great, but he's been able to see things better, and that's a huge difference in a two-game series.
Steve Bordstein, again, our guest right now. Steve, Game 6 of the World Series tomorrow. Regardless, the season's coming to an end over the next couple of days. Win or lose, I've got to get you back on the show later this week, because if it's a loss, you and I have shared that agony on each other's shows before. If it's a win, it's a joy that neither one of us have ever tasted on each other's show. So one way or another, we've got to get you back on later this week.
All right, but last thing, Is it over tomorrow or is it over Wednesday?
It's over Wednesday. I'm going to take Tampa to win game six.
It's over tomorrow.
All right. One of us will be right. I hope it's you.
Over tomorrow, and you and I are going to be, and you and I are going to watch, a victory parade virtually because we don't want to break restrictions. But we're going to watch a victory parade this week in Los Angeles.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right, Steve.
Patience, my young Jedi. Patience.
Yeah. Steve Bordstein. He's the calming presence, if you haven't noticed, joining us here on Drive Time Sports today.
So you're the only person that actually believes that, by the way.
Well,
so, yeah.
I do. You know what? My wife and father. Father would probably agree with you being the calming presence after last night as well. So they extend their thanks to you as well. I'm sure they do.
My pleasure.
Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Listen, you must... Say it again. Buscarini? All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens, where you're right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down!
Price, Utah.
Now!
Me and my man, Trav.
Yeah!
Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
College football is starting to get a tad bit more normal. What I mean by that is we have the Big Ten back, so now we're just missing one Power 5 conference. And while we're still a couple of weeks away from the Pac-12, we have start times now. And so, you fans, you don't have to wait much longer. November 7th coming up, Arizona, Utah, 2 p.m. Of course, we're going to bring you every Utah game right here on KOAL. It'll be a short schedule, but like I said, we got times now. So Arizona, week 1, 2 p.m. UCLA, week 2, 5:30 p.m. And then the week after that to be determined against USC. And that's the midway point for Utah's season. At that particular time, we're only going to have 3 weeks left. Arizona State, Oregon State, and Colorado. That's it. Like I said, it's somewhat of a normal college football season. Let's take a look at the new top 25. Again, this is the AP top 25. So you got to remember, the College Football Playoff Committee has absolutely no say in any of this. Right? It gives us a guide. But here we go. Top 5. Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Georgia. Ohio State beats the pants off of Nebraska. And Justin Fields was phenomenal, every bit as good as advertised, nearly a perfect game. Ohio State climbs one spot, Notre Dame drops one. Notre Dame fans yesterday upset, don't be angry, you'll have a chance to prove yourself in 2 weeks against Clemson. Again, that's irrelevant. So top 5, Clemson, Bama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Georgia. 6 through 10, Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, Texas A&M, Wisconsin, Florida. Florida's still in the top 10 with a 2-1 record. We go 11 through 15, BYU, Miami, Michigan, Oregon, North Carolina. Cougars go up a spot. So BYU climbs one spot. That's because Penn State drops all the way to 18 after suffering a loss at the hands of Indiana, who is now number 17. We'll get to that in just a moment. But again, 10 through 15, Florida, BYU, Miami, Michigan, Oregon, North Carolina. Kansas State 16, Indiana 17, Penn State 18, Marshall 19, Coastal Carolina 20. Coastal Carolina just keeps winning, and they keep moving up the ladder. It's almost similar to a BYU situation. It's funny to see Coastal Carolina, a top 20 team. Are they better than USC, SMU, Iowa State, Oklahoma, Boise State, who round out the top 25? No. No, they're not. But it's a fun story. It's a good story. Coastal Carolina. USC 21, SMU 22, Ohio State 23, Oklahoma 24, Boise State 25. That's where we're sitting as far as the AP top 25 poll. And it sets up for some real compelling football this Saturday, including Ohio State. Now, I get it. The Buckeyes look good against Indiana. I believe the Buckeyes are a top 4 team in the country. I don't have any gripe about that whatsoever. In fact, just based off the small sample size, I'll just say it, they're better than Notre Dame. Let's just be real. The Irish haven't been overly impressive. And again, they'll have their chance to prove themselves in 2 weeks against Clemson. But from where I'm sitting right now, I'll take OSU over Notre Dame. Ohio State will have a better test this week. They have to travel on the road to take on Penn State, who I assure you will look better. See, this is the thing that you can't calculate. You can't account for in college football. The NFL week one, it was horrible. Remember how bad the football was week one? It wasn't good. And now as we get to week, where are we at? Week eight, week seven comes to a close tonight. You're starting to see better football. You're starting to see the teams that were playing bad football in week one. They're still playing bad football in week eight. But the teams that were playing bad football in week one, the good teams are playing much better in week eight. You separate yourself. There were good teams that played bad football in week one. And I wonder if that was the case for Penn State. And I think it's a legitimate argument to make based on the fact that Penn State looked that much more comfortable in the second half. Ohio State on the road to take on Penn State. Ohio State is favored by 11 in this contest. Give me Penn State. If you're going to give me 11 points, I'll take Penn State. Really, I think Ohio State's good. I think Penn State's better the way they played. And it killed a lot of drama, didn't it? Like, the Big Ten was going to provide us all kinds of drama right out of the gate. It comes back. We're going to get Penn State, Ohio State. Both teams are going to be 1-1. We're going to get a Big Ten game. It's primetime ABC. Two teams inside the top 10 for sure. And it didn't happen. One of the big college football games coming up this weekend. LSU at Auburn. LSU's not a great football team. Auburn's not a great football team either. Somewhat refreshing, right? To see the SEC not dominating the top five, not dominating the top 10. There's legitimate worries for both of these programs. And to be honest, you expected it with LSU. Lost a lot of talent. How are they going to be able to recover? Neither team's in the top 25. And I think what's even more alarming, neither team is in the top 25, and the Big Ten's played one game, and the Pac-12 is yet to play a game. And you have the likes of Coastal Carolina and BYU ranked above Auburn and LSU. It kills that game a little bit. That was a game that we had circled at the beginning of the year. Now, LSU just throttled South Carolina, and South Carolina beat Auburn 2 weeks ago. Auburn barely gets past Ole Miss on Saturday. Weird things happen in this rivalry. It's one of the can't-miss games. LSU favored by 2. I take LSU. Clemson, Boston College, one of the best, the best team in the country right now, Clemson. 31.5-point favorites over BC. We get Wisconsin and Nebraska. I don't need to see that game. I saw what I saw from Nebraska. That's a team that's not going to be playing good football 5 weeks from now because I just don't think they're a very good team. And then you start looking at the rest of the big games, and there shouldn't be... If there is an upset, it's a monumental upset this week. There really shouldn't be very many of them. Notre Dame gets Georgia Tech. Alabama gets Mississippi State. Texas A&M gets Arkansas. Florida will play host to Missouri. BYU gets Western Kentucky. And by the way, before I end this college segment, I'm going to go back to what I was saying about BYU. I had some angry Cougar fans text me. Calm down. All right. I wasn't taking shots at the BYU football program. They've done everything that's been asked of them. Just don't run a fake punt when you're up 35 against Texas State. That's it. A punter's got one job. Kick the football. That's all he's got to do. Let's pause for just a moment. We'll come back. We'll put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports when we return. Again, we're live right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
In 5, 4, 3, 2...
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the game. Real name, no gimmicks. That's why I ain't got no.
Out of time of this edition of Drive Time Sports. Spent a lot of time talking about the World Series. Tonight, off night for the World Series. So watch Monday Night Football. We get the Rams and the Bears, two best defensive players, two of the best defensive players in the game. Aaron Donald, Klomak, they go at it. Jared Goff traditionally struggles against the Chicago Bears. And I don't know how good the Bears are. I don't know how good the Rams are. And tonight's a compelling Monday Night Football game. Tomorrow on the show, it will be Football Tuesday. We'll catch up with head coach John Famala with the Emory Spartans. He's going to join us to talk about the team's season-ending loss this past Friday. And we'll also talk Week 7 of the NFL. The question that we will dive into tomorrow, I promise, should the Cowboys consider a coaching change at the end of the season? You say 1 year is enough? Not enough? No, 1 year is plenty. 1 year is plenty. I'm telling you, I typically do not blame coaches. I don't think it's an overreaction to talk about Mike McCarthy being out after year one. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about other topics in the NFL as well. How does the Beckham injury, the Odell injury affect Cleveland, a team that's 5-2 right now? We'll talk about that and more. It's coming up tomorrow on Drive Time Sports. We'll see you then. Be safe. I am out.